Good morning, everyone. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at the Brookings Institution. I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar on the European Medicine Agency's post-market drug safety activities, in particular, an overview of their PROTECT program. This is a topic that I know is very important to many of you. I know many of you are very familiar with the efforts of drug safety surveillance in the United States, and in particular the FDA's Sentinel initiative. What we want to talk about today is the extensive work going on in other countries on similar initiatives and research, related research analyses to advance their capabilities to monitor medical product safety. And in particular, we're focusing in on the EMA's pharmacoepidemiological research on outcomes of therapeutics by a European consortium. That's where the acronym PROTECT comes from. PROTECT's main objective is to strengthen the ability to monitor the risks and benefits of medical products that are available in Europe. This is a broad public-private partnership, and it's been working to develop a methodologic framework to collect data and enhance early detection and assessment of adverse drug reactions. As you know from prior webinars focusing on the U.S. efforts in this area, while a lot of progress is being made on an infrastructure for data collection and ongoing active surveillance through programs like Sentinel, there are a lot of unresolved analytic issues, data validations, appropriate statistical methods and the like, which Sentinel, the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, and other initiatives are addressing now. More work is needed, and clearly this is a priority in Europe as well. So we're going to hear more about that today. The presentation is going to provide an overview of the PROTECT project, including the governance for the project and the tools and methods that have been developed and are currently being developed by PROTECT. Before we begin the webinar, I'd like to quickly go over a few of our usual housekeeping items. We encourage you to submit questions throughout the presentation today. You can do that online at the chat box at the right side of your screen. So whenever you've got a question or comment, just click on the box, type it in, and it will go into our queue. Also, as a reminder, please make sure that the microphone on your telephone is muted. You can do that either by pressing your phone's mute button or by pressing star 6, so that's star 6 to mute. In order to ask a question, when we get to that part of the presentation, that part of the webinar, you can unmute your line by pressing star 7. If you have any technical questions along the way or any technical problems, please call the WebEx helpline at 1-866-229-3239. So I'd like to get started right away, and I'd like to welcome today's presenter. Xavier Kurtz is the principal scientific investigator responsible for pharmacovigilance activities and signal detection in the post-authorization pharmacovigilance and risk management sector of the European Medicines Agency. Xavier is well known to many of you from his long-standing contributions to this field and involvement in it. He's been a terrific European colleague for us at Brookings and in the FDA-related collaborations for his many contributions to our prior conferences, webinars, and other activities, and we're very pleased to have him with us today. After the presentation that Xavier is going to lead, we'll open up the line for questions. And again, you can submit those questions or comments at any time during the presentation using the Q&A tab at the top of your screen. So I'd like to go ahead and hand the presentation over to Xavier. If you're with us, Xavier, please make sure you've pressed star 7, and please go ahead. Star 7 to unmute. Hopefully you're with us.
Hello.
Hi, Xavier. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, and thank you for your very nice introduction. So today I'm going to present the PROTECT project in my capacity as a scientific coordinator of the project on behalf of the European Medicine Agency. So this is a five-year research project, and we are now in the third year. In this presentation, I will give an overview of the objectives and methods of the PROTECT project, and I will also present some selected preliminary results. But as you will see, this is a rather comprehensive project in the field of pharmacovigilance and pharmacoepidemiology, and therefore I can only present some selected results, but I will give an overview, and we may then exchange some information and provide you with the additional information after the webinar. So next slide, please. I'm not sure if I can, okay, I can put myself. Okay, so PROTECT is funded by the European Community 7 Framework Program and the program that has been launched 5 years ago, which is called the Innovative Medicines Initiative. And I would like to give just one word about this initiative, because it is funding now a large number of projects. I cannot... can you then... I cannot have the following slide, next slide. Okay.
Okay, Xavier, we'll take over control of the slides since it seems to not be working all that well for you.
Okay, thank you.
One last thing, I think some folks are having some difficulty hearing from you, so if you can just try and make sure you're as close to the phone as possible, that would be great.
Okay. Is it better now? The mission of the Innovative Medicine Initiative is to address bottlenecks in the development of new medicines. And why is epidemiology and pharmacovigilance included? It's because it was considered when the project was developed that one of the conditions for early access to new medicines for patients is the confidence for regulators about the robustness of the post-marketing surveillance. And therefore, pharmacovigilance was included among the priorities to be developed by the IMI. Up to now, there are 30 projects funded through 5 cores, and there are projects that are preclinical, clinical, and that address a large variety of topics. And we are on now in the 6th core, which is ongoing, which is on antibiotic resistance. PROTECT was funded through the 1st core. So this is a public-private partnership, and with 1 billion euros provided by project partners and by private partners, which is SPA, the Association of the Pharmaceutical Industry. So this is a total of 2 billion euros, and it is the last core, I think, will be in maybe 6th, 7th, or the 8th core. But this is a project that is going to be funded for several years. So the next slide, please.
Xavier, before we go on to the next slide, still getting some requests for any way to make the volume higher. So I don't know if there's anything else you can do to either speak more loudly or maybe off speaker that might help, but anything you can do would be appreciated. And in the meantime, we'll move on to the next slide. Thank you.
Okay. We have tried to increase the level here, but I'm not sure we are in a position to increase the level of the microphone. So I'm going to speak closer to the microphone. So the objective of the PROTECT is the objective that was stated in the call of the IMI, and the overall goal is to strengthen the monitoring of benefit risk of medicines in Europe by developing innovative methods to enhance early detection and assessment of adverse drug reactions from different data sources, and so the objective is to address different data sources like clinical trials, spontaneous reporting, and observational studies, but also to enable the integration and presentation of data on benefits and risk, and these methods will be tested in real-life situations. Next slide. Is the sound better?
It's still not great, but I think we'll just have to do the best we can.
Okay. So the next slide shows the overall structure of the project. So the objective is to use a large number of data sources that are existing, and we use data from clinical trials, observational studies, electronic health records, and also spontaneous EDR reports. This source of data will be used to collect information on risks and benefits, and this information will be used to address new methods in signal detection, also in for signal evaluation, and the benefits and risks will be integrated into projects related to the benefit-risk integration and representation. In addition, we saw that there is room for innovative methods for data collection directly from consumers, and there is a work package that is specifically that addresses specifically this topic. Next slide. There are a total of 32 partners, both from public side and from private side. So the coordinator is EMA and other important regulatory authorities like the Danish authorities, Spanish ones, and the MHRA, and a number of academic institutions. Also, WHO, UMC is participating, and we have a number of companies that are participating in the private as a private partners to the project. The next slide shows the overall governance, and I'm not going to detail this study, but you may also already see from this slide that this is a very extremely comprehensive project addressing a large number of issues in the field of pharmacovigilance and pharmacoepidemiology. And in this presentation, I will focus on an overview for work package 2, 3, 4, and 5, which are probably the rules that are providing the main basic research in pharmacovigilance and pharmacoepidemiology. So in the next slide, I'm presenting the objectives of the work package 2, which is titled Framework for Pharmacoepidemiological Studies. These objectives are to develop, test, and disseminate methodological standards for the design, conduct, and analysis of pharmacoepidemiological studies and applicable to different safety issues and using different data sources. So these objectives may seem to be ambitious and even a bit presumptuous, but these respond, they answer to questions and issues to regulatory authorities. On the next slide, as regulators, we are often faced with the difficult situation where conflicting results arise from different observational studies on the same safety issue, even sometimes where these safety issues have been addressed in the same source of information in the same database. So, and these conflicting results may lead to delay regulatory process and the taking of decisions, and it may also lead sometimes to request additional studies. And I'm going to show you an example. The next slide shows results of two studies on the use of statins and the risk of fracture done in the General Practice Reserve Database in the UK and around the same period by two different groups. For the sake of time, I'm going to look at only at the first line of these results of these tables. So these two studies were performed around 2000-2001. And the first study by Meyer et al. Shows that there is a relative risk of 0.55 as regards the risk of statins and the risk of fracture. And the second study by Van Stuyt et al. Shows a relative risk of 1, so no increase or no preventive risk. and the data regarding the number of prescriptions or time since use show the same level of the differences. Additional studies have been done in order to explore why there was such a difference, like slide, and even if the same database was used during the same period, it seems that it is apparent that there have been different designs, used different patients actually have been used, different source population, the definition of the statin use has been has varied from study to study. Therefore, although these differences can be identified by an in-depth analysis of the methods and results of these studies, these differences are not always obvious when these studies are published. And so the dilemma sometimes is to know which data are the best ones and which ones should be trusted or which one can be used for regulatory purposes. So one package two is that the aim is to really define some best practice in the conduct of pharmacoepidemiological studies safety, post-authorization safety studies. Next slide. The work plan of Work Package 2 includes three working groups, and the next slide shows the work plan for the first one, which is called databases. The objective of this working group one group is to conduct studies on adverse event drug pairs in different EU databases. So they have selected five key adverse event drug pairs, and protocols have been drafted for these adverse event drug pairs. And these protocols and these studies will be conducted in six large databases that are in operation in the EU with different designs. So the results of these different studies will be compared. Source of discrepancies will be identified, and through a kind of iterative process, so it will be shown how studies can be, how we can identify source of discrepancies and what is the best practice. I have to say that these five key drug event combinations are already known associations. The next slide shows which are these five drug event combinations. They have been selected in order to address different kind of methodological issues. For example, short-term or long-term exposure, if we take antibiotics or beta 2 agonists, acute events like acute liver injury or long-term events like cancer. So these five drug event pairs will address different methodological issues. And there is a stepwise approach in the conduct of the studies, from descriptive studies to cohort studies, and also other design as applicable. The next slide shows the progress status. Actually, it may not be so important, but we have finalized already descriptive studies, and now we are in the process of having results for cohort studies. On the next three slides, I'm going to show some preliminary results. Just this is perhaps anecdotal because there are some selected results, but they show what can be found in this, what is the future of this, the results, and what kind of results can be found. Next slide. So this slide show the prevalence of use of benzodiazepine in the six database, showing on the left panel that there are important differences between countries, but on the right panel it shows that if we look at the distribution and the prevalence by year, then by age group, sorry, then and by year, there are really limited difference between these different countries, which tends to reassure us about the validity and the robustness of the protocols that have been set up. The next slide shows similar information for antidepressants, and it shows the first of all the prevalence of use by year, and also on the right side by it shows the use in 2009 in women, which shows for that prevalence large differences between countries. So this kind of information will be used in order to calculate public health impact of the of these risks, and also to calculate attributable risks, and therefore show the what the maybe differences between countries, and as which may also help looking at discrepancies between studies. The next slide is on the descriptive studies on the hip fracture, and again we show on the right hand panel that if we look at the incidence by age group, there are very limited differences between countries, but with a very large very increase of incidence after the 60 years. So the second group in Work Package 2 is looking at methods for controlling confounding factors, and there is a large range of simulation studies that are being conducted, both on propensity scores, also on instrumental variables, also at on looking at multi-database studies, and looking at the methodological aspect of using different databases that have different left and right censoring mechanism, and how these different censoring across databases may affect the estimation of risks. The second step of this group will be to apply these methods to the data that will have been collected for the five adverse event group pairs. I have to say that this first part, conduct of simulation studies, several publications have already been issued and can be retrieved in the literature. On the next slide, this shows also the information on drug utilization. Actually, a number of tools have been developed in the project in order to provide source of data for the conduct of the studies. And one of the outcome and one of the side outcome of this work has been the inventory of drug utilization data in Europe, which is an inventory that is now available on the PROTECT website, which is a rather comprehensive inventory of all database of database that can be consulted to now to have information on drug consumption and also on the characteristics and the information that is available. It is one of the first projects of this kind identifying and the all non-commercial drug consumption data providers in Europe. There has been also validation of the data that has been made. And in a second step, there has been an inventory of research working groups on drug utilization in Europe, and this has been a subject of a manuscript that has been submitted now. The next slide shows address the work package 3, which is on methods for signal detection, which whose goal is to improve early and proactive sickness detection from spontaneous reports, electronic health records, and clinical trials. The next slide shows that this is a comprehensive research program into methods of sickness detection, and probably this is one of this is really a comprehensive program of fundamental research into the methods of sickness detection, addressing most of the methods and most of the aspects linked to sickness detection. So these groups wish to go really in depth in all the issues and aspects of sickness detection. I'm not going to detail this work program. I will give you two or three examples, and the next slide shows the progress to date of one group. Yeah, next slide. That this group is looking at concordance of disproportional methods and statistics of disproportionality analysis with risk estimates. So as this gives an example of the amount of work that is being performed, there has been a selection of 78 drug ADR pairs from pharmacovigilance issues leading to European regulatory recommendations in the period 2007 and 2010. And for these drug ADR pairs, they have identified studies, epidemiological studies or clinical trials that may have provided data on pharmacovigilance issues. And then they have applied, they have looked retrospectively into the drug vigilance database, which is the European ADR database, in order to look at what was the statistics of disproportionality analysis in the same period to see what, and then to compare to see if there is any concordance that would have been useful for regulatory purposes between these statistics of disproportionality analysis and epidemiological risk estimates. The next slide shows also a tool that has been developed to help the program, but is that has become an outcome by itself, which is a structured database of the 4.8 section of the SPC, which is the section on undesirable effects. So the database has been implemented, and in this database there is a mapping of all colloquial terms, so like MedDRA LLT terms that are listed in the summary of product characteristics to MedDRA PT terms, and this is based. This is in an Excel file. This database will be used for assessing masking effects of in databases of spontaneous reports and also for research purposes. However, it will be published very soon as an Excel file, downloadable Excel file, on the Protect website in order to be used by whoever wants to use it. It is interesting that the methods that is being used, that has been used for constructing that database, is it in itself very useful that and will be applied to other, to all products authorized in Europe. And for example, we have developed some data-free text extraction algorithms that now allows to map these terms from the SPC to the MedDRA PT terminology for 98% of the case, so there are about 2% of the terms that still need expert review, but this reduces a lot the amount of work. Next slide, it is concerned a database survey of all of the spontaneous report database in a large number of different settings. I'm not going to detail this for the sake of time. And I would like to present on the next slide the project that is being developed for developing new tools for data collection from consumers. And the objective is to develop new methods of data collection in pharmacovigilance and collect this data as early as possible after directly from consumers once they have they've received drugs in pharmacies or elsewhere. And as a feasibility study, there is a study being done in pregnant women. Next slide. So the study will recruit pregnant women directly without intervention of healthcare professionals through two different systems, the interactive voice response system, which will then collect information of medication usage, lifestyle, and risk factors, and also from a website, and we will compare, look at the differences and assess strengths and weaknesses of data collection and transferability to other population of the system of data collection. Next slide. This study is being performed in four countries, Denmark, Poland, the Netherlands, and United Kingdom, with 1,400 pregnant women per country, and these women are recruited directly without intervention of healthcare professionals. The next slide shows the what is the study outline. I'm not going to present it, but the main source of recruitment will be through the web, and then there are also pregnant women recruited by IVRF in order to look at the concordance of information and the amount of information that can be collected. I'm going to pass the next slide for the sake of time, which shows what are the objectives of this study, and I think I've already presented them. So I will go directly to the next slide, which is the benefit risk assessment work package, whose objective is to develop methods for use in benefit risk assessment, including both the underpinning modeling and the presentation of the results with a particular emphasis on graphical methods. So we try in this work package to develop methodologies that could help regulators, first of all, to assess the benefit risk of drug, but also to present this benefit risk assessment. The next slide shows, explains that the our task as regulators is to make good decisions on which medicines should receive a license based on the based on the best available evidence. But it becomes increasingly important to be able to justify and explain these decisions to patients and all other stakeholders, and also to use more formal approaches of decision making, and especially of modern methods of graphical display, in order to help to the justification of the decisions and also the presentation of these decisions. There are a number of questions on the next slide that we need to answer, and that we will try to answer through that project. First of all, what is the role of the formalization of the decision making? Which quantitative approach should be used or should do in order to achieve these results and these objectives that I presented previously? Whose value preferences should take the priority, and what are the differences in the preferences, in the values expressed by regulators, pharmaceutical companies, physicians or patients? Where and how do we find these preferences? And do we need to present or to use this stakeholder's preference a priori in order to calculate benefit risk or to present benefit risk assessment, or should we provide tools to allow individual decision-makers or stakeholders to explore their own preferences and the consequent decisions? And also there is this issue on communication benefits and risk. So on the next slide, this shows the different stakeholders that we will be involved and that we would like to address in this project: patients, healthcare providers, health technology assessment institutions that provide information on cost effectiveness, the regulatory authorities, and also pharmaceutical companies. Next slide. So we are going to use a mix of reviewing methods using benefit risk assessment and also testing these methods via case study approach. We're also reviewing all the graphical visual representation that could be used, and we will use more complex case studies to further develop benefit risk methodology. So in what are we pursuing in these case studies? The main objective is to choose some case studies and that have led to important decisions like withdrawal by regulators in the past, and using the same source and the same of information and the same data that regulators used when they took decisions, we will simulate what would could have been the decision and the conclusion of the assessment when using quantitative methods of benefit risk assessment and more structured methods of benefit risk assessment. So first of all, we have made an extensive, exhaustive research of all benefit risk methods, and the next slide shows the classification of these methods. You see that there are a large number of them. I think there are 43, and if you do not like the acronyms, then this is not a good field to be there, to be involved in. We have classified these methods. That the objective was also to assess these methods, and all of these methods have been evaluated according to a number of criteria that I'm not going to detail. And we then have selected a number of methods, which are shown on the next slide. So these are the methods that were recommended for further testing. There are some methods that are more presenting a framework for evaluation, like the PROACT URL or the DRACT method. Some are comprehensive, like MCDA or SMEA. There are metric methods that are that you're using thresholds in this instance, and we have included NNT and NNH, number needed to treat and number needed to harm, in order to because these methods are simple and frequently used, and they were useful as a reference. We are also using health indices, QALY, Q-TWiST, and others. And these methods have been used in five case studies. First of all, the next slide shall also what these methods can bring in terms of representation of results, and how they could be useful in order to visualize the benefit risk assessment. I'm going to present an example. The next slide of one of the case studies. And it should be clear that the results that are presented do not replace or are intended to replace or comment on any regulatory decision made by National Regulatory Agency nor the European Medicines Agency. These methods are used and for solely to the for the testing of the methodology. So the next slide shows the five case studies that they actually have been already finalized, and which method has been used for each of the case studies. So as I explained previously, these five drugs have been subject to benefit-risk evaluation by the European Regulatory Authority, and have been withdrawn from the market. And the objective of this case study is to look at the time using the data that were available to the regulators when they have taken the decision, what would be the result of applying these limited risk assessment methods. I'm going to give one example, and it is perhaps an anecdotal, but this is the example of Tysabri. Next slide. So, which was indicated for relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, and the issue was progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy. It was withdrawn in 2005, but reintroduced because of patient demands mainly partly in 2006. And we have used the same data that were available at as for the regulators in 2005, and which are included in the European Public Assessment Report, and we have used the methodology that are listed here. Next slide. I think you can. These methods were used by two teams independently, and they have used two set of methods. Now, on the next slide, I'm going to show some results that the result of testing different methods, and these are descriptive results, the orientation of the future work of the group. So I'm going to show different presentations that and representation of the benefit risk that can be displayed with these different methods. And none of these graphs is going to give an overall benefit risk, but this slide shows the main outcomes, and they are divided in favorable effects and unfavorable effects. So the benefit risk score on this graph is the product of the weight and of the value, and we can show that most of the benefit risk contribution in terms of the favorable effect is coming from prevention of relapse. We see that the PML is given by stakeholders a very high weight. However, its frequency is so low that in terms of overall weight, it is the value in the benefit risk assessment score is very low. On the other hand, infusion reactions are maybe a worse risk and may have a more important implication on a overall benefit risk score. The next slide shows another type of presentation with next slide, please. Again with different presentation and with colors showing different outcomes, and so this shows that the positive incremental benefit risk component, which is in dark blue, so these dark blue bars are the subtraction of the positive and negative benefit risk incremental scores. The next slide is again a different display, and which is provide the same kind of information, but this is also so showing what is being tested, and so this different kind of presentation will be tested in a matter of evaluation with stakeholders and patients. Next slide, I think I can skip the next slide, which is also another type of presentation given by other methods. So the next slide shows the ongoing work. So now we have finalized the wave one case studies, and these case studies are being integrated and summarized. We are in the process of reviewing the visual representation of benefits and risk and see what are the best ones for different purposes. And wave two case studies now are being developed. Two are extended case studies from wave one to investigate more into the benefit risk methodologies used and visual representation. And there are two new case studies looking at more complex benefit risk questions on warfarin and positive beta zone. So, next slide. This is we have already submitted overall in the project a number of publications that may be available, but we are currently in the process of including information for general public on our website, which and the address is being given here. Many of the results will be disseminated to the NSEP network, which is the European Network of Centers for Pharmacoepidemiology and Pharmacovigilance. But the objective of AMER through this project is, of course, to influence on the regulatory activities and on guidelines and methods that are being used by regulatory authorities. So this is it for my presentation. Yes, I have one last slide which shows that actually the PROTECT project, as you saw, is a very comprehensive project. It's like a cargo boat which delivers a lack of deliverables to the port, to the harbor, but which is has been long to start, and it's going slowly, but surely, and with a lot of results. Okay, thank you for your attention. I hope that I could be heard, and I realize that I'm providing a lot of information that may not be just preliminary at this stage.
Xavier, thank you very much for the presentation. Also, want to thank you for your efforts to try to make sure you were heard. I know some of our participants were having some difficulty, and for them, just a couple of reminders. First, the slides should have come to you along with your confirmation emails for participation in the webinar, but in addition, they will be available on our website within a few days. We'll also be making an audio recording of the webinar available with those slides, and we'll do everything we can to make sure that that's as easy to hear as possible. In the meantime, I would like to start with a couple of follow-up questions from the presentation. Xavier, I think your efforts with NSEP, with the PROTECT program, and more generally with EMEA, give you, I think, kind of a unique perspective on the state of the art of data in Europe available for safety surveillance. Necessarily, these projects involve combining data from different countries, different analytic efforts and the like. What's your sense so far about how comparable these different data sources are? Is it? I know part of the goal here is to answer these questions about data validity, but are we headed towards kind of more EMEA-wide effort for active safety surveillance?
Well, there are different projects looking at these aspects of the diversity of databases that are available in Europe. There is one project which is looking, trying at pooling results, of aggregating results from different databases using similar kind of methods. There is no doubt that currently one of the priorities of the European Commission and Innovative Medicine Initiative is to, first of all, identify databases that are available and that can be used in for safety assessment. And objective is to identify these databases that and registries that are held by specialists and that provide data on specific diseases. There is a program that is just being launched by IMI in order to first to have what is being called EMIF, which stands for European Medicines Information Framework, I think, or Medical Information Framework, which is to establish a common methodology for addressing specific disease related problems in different databases. So there is a common methodology, a common framework, and then there are projects for different diseases that will include in that framework a specialized database. There is one project now that has just started for Alzheimer's disease. There is one project also for diabetes. One will probably start for vaccines. So the objective is really to have to establish a common framework to analyze data from databases that may exist now that are not used for pharmacovigilance or for drug safety.
Okay, thank you. And just another question that we've received relates to the work that you're doing on valuing risks and benefits. You went through a number of different methods. Could you talk a little bit more about how patient preferences fit into the weighting you described? So you described, you know, sort of the weight and the different components of risk and benefit that would be given different weights to come up with the valuations. How do patient preferences fit into that?
Okay. Currently, we are using available information on patient preferences for certain medical conditions. PML or other ones. For those that do not exist, we are not currently doing, at this stage, an in-depth program of collecting information of patient preferences. But once we have reached another step, this is something that we will probably start. We have one of the partners of the PROTECT project is IAPO, which is the International Alliance of Patients Associations. So we have a partnership with them, and in order to collect to identify, first of all, the best methodology to collect information on patient preferences that are not available in the literature. But at this stage, for the results that you have seen, we have either used existing data or collected some limited information through this patient association, but they are more used as a, an example, as a, they are currently used for development of, for the purpose of development of methodology. So we are not at this first stage aiming at having completely accurate information on patient preferences.
Okay, thank you. Another question, can you talk a little bit more about your plans for simulated studies as part of these analyses and the data that you're intending to use, or if that's, I know there are a number of simulations included here, but maybe some general themes or top priorities around the simulation work?
I cannot provide you information, detailed information on the plan for the simulation themselves, simulation studies themselves. There is a separate group doing that. If the person is interested, I can give the link to the statisticians that are doing these simulation studies. What I can say is that the plan is to apply then these results and these the results of the simulation studies to the database that will be collected through the live studies in the database for the five adverse event group pairs. But I would not be able to provide you detailed information on the simulation studies. I can,
Okay, I think we have time for about one more question, and there's certainly a lot of interest in your talk. How does this program, the PROTECT program, fit in with the new pharmacovigilance regulations from the EU? I know this is more of a research effort at this stage, but presumably is going to have an impact on guiding the regulatory framework.
Okay. First of all, this is a set of, with the progress of activities that that have been set in order to improve the pharmacovigilance in Europe, and we had identified some years ago three components we need in order to improve pharmacovigilance. We need law, we need resources and methods. So law has been introduced with the new pharmacovigilance legislations. Resources means a bit of money, but also mainly to increase the capacity of the pharmacovigilance community in Europe to perform studies and to increase the scientific standards in Europe. So this is done through the NSEP network, and then to develop methods, which is done through PROTECT. As you may know, the new legislation now gives the possibility for the agency to regulatory authorities to impose the conduct of studies, but also to have a look and to have a possibility to influence the protocol of these studies and how these studies are analyzed. So the results, and this is what I presented at the end of my presentation, the outcome and objective of PROTECT is, at the end, is to be able to provide to companies for which have to perform studies guidance and recommendations, strong recommendations on the design of the studies, what are the different databases that could be available to study specific problems, how to address specific questions that have arisen in this database, and so to provide a best practice guidance on the development and conduct of the specialization safety studies.
right. Xavier, thank you very much, and thanks also for taking a number of these questions on interesting extensions and big questions related to the implications of the PROTECT project. I also want to thank you and want to thank our audience for trying to bear with us through some of the sound difficulties. And again, we will have materials available online within just a few days on the Brookings website. For those of you who had questions that we weren't able to get to, given the interest in this broad topic, we'll try to connect you with Xavier and his team to help follow up on that. And Xavier, we look forward to continuing to work with you on these important safety issues. So thanks again. We are planning a few more webinars over the summer, including an update from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute on July 12th. So that PCORI webinar is going to be on July 12th from 11 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. And we'll also have highlights from the OMOP Annual Symposium, the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, annual symposium at a later date in the summer. We will be sending out announcements for these webinars in the coming weeks, so please keep an eye out for that. Thanks again for joining us today, and we hope that you all enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Please stand by.